Hello and welcome to the LRM podcast, sponsored by Adrian Flux Insurance. I'm Martin Dominey.
And I'm Steve Miller.
And today we're joined by our guest columnist for the new issue, which is on sale today, Matt Allcroft, aka Fitter Matt.
How are we doing?
Good to have you back. You had a brief stint on the podcast at the Billinghoff Roadshow, didn't you?
Yeah, I went down, broke my Land Rover, spent £7 on a really pint of beer, and then got dragged on for a podcast.
Yeah.
Don't drink ale then. Did you drink lager or ale?
Ale in winter, lager in summer.
Yeah.
Okay, so you would have been on lager.
Oh, no, in fact, I don't think I could get a pint of lager. I think they'd run out. I ended up on some horrible concoction of... Yeah, I can't remember what...
Real ales, isn't they?
I think I ended up on one of those horrible real ales that's trying to be a lager.
The new ones, like the...
Yeah, those really terrible...
Like BrewDogs?
Yeah. Well, don't mention that bold, stupid...
But that BrewDog's got that kind of... They're trying to be like modern IPAs, aren't they?
Yeah, but it's owned by that stupid bald git who ripped all his employees off, said he was going to plant a forest, then it's all died, so now he's trying to sell it.
The forest or the beer company?
I think he'd give both away at the minute, wouldn't he? You just look at him, he's got shark eyes.
Shark too close together?
No, they just look dead. There's no soul there at all.
So we've quickly got off topic from Land Rovers.
Richard Tiggle like this, yeah. Oh, it's his beers.
I'll just make sure you never get sponsored by BrewDog ever.
That's all right.
What a pity.
So you didn't like the beer.
Didn't like the beer. The podcast was all right.
Yeah, it was good fun.
It was hot in that tent, wasn't it?
It was hot in that tent.
It was really good playing past the sausage, wasn't it? With the
the mic.
With the one microphone to record everybody.
And here we have three.
We have all of the mics.
Matt's experienced the pure professionalism of an LRM podcast.
You are still actually sitting on the salmon sofa, though.
Yes.
So nothing has changed.
No. It lives up to the hype.
Yeah.
Yes. Oh, well, good to have you back anyway. And as I say, the January issue of Land Rover Monthly is on sale today, if you're listening to this on Wednesday when the podcast comes out. And Matt has got a guest column in that magazine, so be sure to check it out. It's very good.
I did a writing.
You did and write.
That paperclip, like you say, he put a shit.
Oh, the little paperclip. Yeah, Microsoft Word paperclip. He was... Yeah, he needed serious...
He's in therapy now.
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
You know, when certain columnists, though, you read it in people's accents, in their voices, which I did when I was reading yours. And then at the end, I see at the end, it's like, yeah, bang.
It's just a TikTok in written form.
Yeah, kind of. But that's obviously people who aren't perhaps familiar with your doings. That's sort of what you're...
Yeah, so I started social media... on TikTok, graduated to YouTube, and then recently started posting on Instagram and Facebook as well, because if you're going to sell your soul, you might as well do the job properly, haven't you, and be across all the platforms, because there's about 16 Fitter Mats on Facebook stealing my content.
Anyway.
It's terrible.
What do they get from stealing it? Money?
Money, yeah. So they
get your content, just repurpose it.
Repost it. Literally download it off TikTok, repost it straight to Facebook, which is all I'm doing. But it's mine.
Yeah.
But you're allowed to.
There's one on there that I think I've got 55,000 followers on Facebook. I think he's on 45,000. And I've reported it every day for the last year. And they took that thing. Because he's literally posted up the same videos over and over again. And some of them will occasionally go viral and... Yeah, he'll be earning money that should be in my pocket for me to waste.
Absolutely. Yeah, that's is it?
I'm far too financially irresponsible to not be getting every penny I can.
It's a lot of effort, doesn't it, social media? Because your content, I mean, aren't you posting pretty much daily on TikTok?
I was.
I don't spend much time on TikTok.
You spend ages on TikTok. You should be in the shed when you're sat there on your sofa scrolling on your phone.
It's
called research.
No.
Yeah. Thing is, though, one minute you can be watching you doing something in a workshop. Next thing, you're learning how to cook roast potatoes.
The algorithm.
So what on earth is going on?
TikTok's algorithm is so clever in how it works, how quickly it susses out what you want to see to keep you scrolling to the next thing.
Social media is an addiction for a lot of people.
Yeah, and the Instagram one, there seems to be no filter on that.
Oh, really?
Oh, it's incredible.
I have to say, I've not really gone down any dark paths on Instagram.
Oh, I've been down many. There are some sights to be seen on there if you go...
Yes, I've never been explored anything like that.
I'd like to keep it that way. I think having grown up when I did and seen the videos that my friends were sharing around via, like, what was it?
Oh, Lively.
Infrared.
Oh, the infrared.
Yeah. Oh, at, like, break time at secondary school in, like, year seven. I think I'm pretty much scarred for life anyway.
Phones weren't invented when I was in secondary school.
No, to print off, like, or, like, chip it into a tablet.
Yeah, shout it into a tin can on a string.
It just wasn't a thing. Phones didn't even know we had one.
They were just coming in when I was at school.
Mm. I remember the first person who got a camera phone in my school. It was like, wow. It was like the wheel had been invented.
Is she on OnlyFans now?
Probably. But, yeah. So, loose theme for today's podcast is Land Rover unpopular opinions. And thankfully, the listeners of the LRM podcast have not let us down. They have sent in some blinders. So, I thought for ease, mainly, I'm going to keep all of them anonymous. So, I'll just filter a few out and we can all get our opinions on them. What do you think?
I think that's a good idea.
Should we chip on with a couple and then we'll maybe chuck in a couple of our own?
Why are they anonymous?
Well, because they might not be popular. The whole point is they're unpopular opinions. Course. I don't want anyone getting lynched on social media, basically.
Yeah, that's boring.
Or anywhere else. Yeah.
Well, okay, so you asked for some unpopular opinions on Land Rovers in the last episode and here's my two pennyworth. You don't need massive mud tires for overlanding. You spend 95% of your time on tarmac getting your destination to pull over and post pictures on Instagram. You're not in Africa/America/Australia.
100% agree.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Also, driving the route 60, not route 66, what is it? The route, the Scotland one?
Oh, NC500.
NC500, that's not overlanding. That's a drive.
Yeah.
I don't think I've ever needed mud tires.
No, but they do look cool, don't they?
They look cool.
Yeah.
But horrendous on the road, really.
I drove all the way to Tuscany on mud tyres this summer, and it was a stupid... I thought to myself, I was packing the truck up...
Is that, like, your Defender?
No, the Ranger.
Oh, I don't care then.
It's practically a Defender. It's got a 2.2.
A Ford Ranger, you should have left it there. got the bus out.
The main reason for taking it is it had aircon.
Well,
but,
yeah,
I get that.
But I took one look. I looked at the tyres before I set off. I'm like, I've never really bothered about it being on mud tyres. And it looks cool for the pictures when I'm over there. And I'll just leave them. And into, like, I cannonballed from where I am in the Peak District all the way to the south of Switzerland in one go. And by, like, hour 12, the mud, I very nearly paid to have the tyres took off and road tyres fitted over there.
When I first started on LRM, my Series 3 had Firestone sat copies on it.
Yeah.
The Federma Maxima, which looks fantastic, but I've never known a tyre, A, that loud, or B, that, like, the sidewalls were made out of bricks, basically.
Just
awful. So uncomfortable.
Yeah.
But I still have mud terrains on both my Defender and my Series because...
Because you're not going far enough in them to...
Not at the moment.
No.
All terrains are that good.
Yeah.
I have not... So my Defender's on BF Goodrich all-terrains, which are the best all-terrains on the market. I don't care what anybody says. That might be an unpopular opinion. But most people who say they aren't that good just can't afford them.
They can't now. Have you seen the price of the KO3?
Yeah, I just bought some.
Have you?
How much are they?
I really want to try them. Like over 250 quid a corner.
Yeah,
are they really as much as that?
Yeah. I think I've got a trade account. I think I paid about 240 quid.
But you can't put a price on quality, can you?
But they last. But they are cheap.
They'll do 40,000-50,000 miles.
Well, it's like we were saying earlier. It's like a pair of boots. BF Goodrich all trains are like expensive boots. They might cost you more in the first instance, but over the lifetime they work out cheaper. So you get twice as long out of them as you do a pair of radars that wear out after 20,000 miles. You're getting 40,000-50,000 out of the BF Goodrich.
Yeah.
And they're not twice as expensive. They're only like 40% more expensive. They actually work out per mile.
Yeah, a lot better.
They work out cheaper. And the BF Goodrich, when they're worn down, are still pretty effective.
Yeah,
whereas I found a lot of the cheap stuff, once you get below 50% tread, like I've got Toyo mud terrains on the Ranger, and the front ones are below 50% now, and it's absolutely useless now.
Right, okay.
You get what you pay for. It does, definitely with tyres, the BF Goodriches per mile work out cheaper.
Fair play. I do want to try the KO3s. They do look cool.
Yeah. That's the whole reason I bought them.
Yeah.
They're quite impressive looking.
They're worth more than the car I'm putting them on.
Yeah.
The car I'm putting them on is worth about 600 quid.
What are they going on?
My uncle's old Isuzu Trooper.
Oh, yeah.
It's going to look the business.
Probably the only Isuzu Trooper with those tyres on.
Probably.
Because most people wouldn't spend that kind of money
Yeah, probably.
And
yeah.
Again, if that old trooper's still going and he's had it however many years and he's happy to serve every year and weld it up for MOT, then it's free car, isn't it?
Isuzu Trooper, I stand by it, was the greatest 4x4 of that generation.
Is it a 3.1?
3.1, 1997. You name me another car in 97 that could get close to that for cost. The only one that compares really, like you can say Discovery, but a 300 TDI Discovery was not the best thing in the world. They weren't as comfortable as the Isuzu. They were slightly better off-road, but that 20% they were better off-road, for the amount of people that use that 20%, I don't think justifies the other sacrifices, like having your eardrums not explode when you're driving more than 50 miles an hour, having on-road handling, air conditioning that works, somewhere to put your right arm.
Well, you've already just snuck in your own unpopular opinion, to be fair. Yeah. Isuzu Trooper better than contemporary Discovery.
100%.
Yeah, it's really unpopular. I find that offensive.
You do, but if you're going to drive to the south of France, would you like to take that Isuzu Trooper with leather seats and aircon and heated seats?
Yeah, no, I wouldn't do it.
No?
No.
Is it a citation or a duty?
It's a duty.
Is it?
It's got the limited slip rear diff.
Yeah, yeah.
Short wheelbase. It's commercial as well. Van sides.
Legend.
Oh, it's a proper bus.
There's a guy in the village I grew up in. He had a long wheelbase duty, and he also had a Series 3 109 with a Perkins engine, and the leaf springs were that flat. He used to drive around the village reeking of chip fat because he'd run it on bridge oil. And the springs were that, like I say, completely collapsed, and it would just drive around on the bump stops. One is an absolute G.
I had one when I was at uni, and we were lucky we had an off-road course at our university, because cool. Harper, one of the main courses there, was off-road vehicle design. So they had to have a test area, which we obviously just used to be yobs on whenever we got the opportunity, which was just whenever they left a gate unlocked. And that short wheelbase trooper I had back then would go anywhere, mainly because I'd given 250 quid for it, and I did not give a single flying about it.
But if you don't, yeah, that's the thing, it takes pressure off you, doesn't it?
I just didn't care. And if someone did something like, you can't do that, I am. Stand back.
Hold my beer. Yeah.
We never drank while we were driving.
Of course not, no.
Of course not, no. That would be highly irresponsible. Next one. Britpart isn't junk. There's lots of bad press about it, and I'm not sure it's all valid because they have very good parts, like the dampers, shock absorbers, for instance, are fantastic. And I would add that poor fitting of parts is often to blame.
100% agree.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah. Most of the stuff I hear of is because it's been badly fitted. And then they get very limited returns on stuff. Because quality control is out of this world at Britpart.
I think 20 years ago, yes, I think they were the cheaper end. But it didn't help that because the people who were buying it were buying the cheaper stuff, perhaps they couldn't afford the good stuff and afford to get it fitted professionally. So they were getting the mate Kevin to fit it with his Halford socket set.
Nothing wrong with Halford socket sets now. That's an unpopular.
I quite like a Halford set.
To be fair, as a breakdown set, it is probably one of the better, more comprehensive sets. I'm just a snap-on whore. But, yeah, the Britpart stuff, I've just put a load on my Defender. I put one of their alternators. I buy all my parts from DLS, Derbyshire Land Rover Services, and they're quite unique, and they've got a big distribution outfit for parts, but then they've also got their own garage on the same side.
So they're fitting the stuff they're selling.
Exactly. No, so when I go up to the counter there, I talk to one of the three brothers that own it, quite good friends with, I'll go, do I need to buy OEM, or will I get away with the cheaper stuff? And they'll point me in the right direction. So like with the alternators, I think the TD5 alternator OEM is about 350 quid, whereas the Britpart one's like 140.
Yeah.
So it's not like you're saving, because normally I'm OEM everything. But when it's that big a difference and they say, well, we sold 60 of them last year, we've had three returned.
Yeah.
Then so I'm like, that's pretty good odds.
The thing is, imagine life without companies like Britpart supporting the industry that we're in, right? Everyone would be in the mess here.
We're 100. We're so lucky that we've got the parts back up we have for Land Rovers. And it's like when we spoke to Paul Myers, who's MD of Britpart, in a previous podcast. Go back and listen to it if you haven't already. He's more than happy to admit that some of their stuff is budget because there's a market for it.
Yeah.
If you want to buy budget stuff for a vehicle you use six times a year, why wouldn't you? If you drive it and rely on it every day, fit name brand stuff.
Yeah, exactly.
And it is, when I was at uni, I couldn't have afforded to have a Defender at uni without companies like Britpart.
Mm.
I couldn't afford to put... At one point, I had to drive my Defender home with a generator running in the flatbed with a battery charger on to keep the thing... So I could drive home because my dad had a 200 TDI Discovery. So I drove home in the middle of the night with the lights running off a battery charger, running off a generator, so that I could steal the alternator off Dad's 200 and put the broken one on his 200 and drive back to you.
Without him knowing.
Without him knowing, so that he had to buy a new alternator.
Genius.
And I didn't, because I couldn't afford it. And I was running that 200 TDI, I was running it down a watered down hydraulic oil that I was acquiring from the engineering workshops.
Allegedly.
That's fine. No, it's... I think it's fine.
Yeah, as long as it's less than 2,000 litres a year. You don't get taxed on it, do you?
This was way back when. It's all stories. It never happened.
Yeah, sure.
But, yeah, so... but without...
this
like,
is all made.
This is all just stories. Yeah, but without the companies like Britpart, I would not have been able to run that truck and go off-roading with my mates, and it just wouldn't have happened.
Yeah.
So, you need them. The scene wouldn't exist without it.
Yeah, I agree with you.
They're constantly evolving with new parts, developing new stuff. Oh, I mean, find me another company that does that.
Even down to their great big book. There's no one else, really, correct me if I'm wrong, who still puts out a parts book.
No.
And that parts book is so handy. Even if I'm not going to buy a Britpart part, to have an actual physical book to look through, rather than scrolling through a screen where you can end up going backwards and my hands are covered in grease, and having that big book with lots of part numbers is so useful.
And then you end up turning to a page, you go, well, that's nice. Yeah. Stuff you don't even think you want, but now it's what we've said about this before. It's like being a kid when the
Argos catalogue.
Yeah. Argos catalogue. Yeah. it's
circle exactly what you want.
Leaving it out in a suggestive manner on the table. Exactly. Or the
just if you were, yeah, Christmas is coming up.
Exactly. Yeah.
It's just the problem now is that we all have adult money.
Yeah, it's a lot easier to buy stuff, isn't it?
It is, especially now that you don't actually see the money leave.
Yeah.
Like when you used to have to buy stuff from shows and you physically had to hand your hard earned cash over.
Well, you get
that
paid
was hard.
Cash.
Yeah. Everything's through the books.
Of course.
Yeah. Obviously. Cash. Yeah, I wouldn't know to accept cash for work. I definitely wouldn't give a 10% discount to anyone wanting cash work done.
We're proud to partner with Adrian Flux, an insurance broker that specialises in covering all types of Land Rovers, including classic, ex-military, modified and Q-plated models. Adrian Flux offers a range of optional extras to make the policy your own and can provide cover for off-roading, green laning, agreed value and build-up cover. Plus, they even offer a discount of up to 15% for Owners Club members. Simply search Adrian Flux Land Rover Insurance for more information or call them directly on 0344 728 0417 for a quote.
But yeah, it's good, isn't it? Shall we get... I've got a whole list here, so we're going to rattle through these quite quickly.
Yeah, go on then.
And we can say whether we agree with them or not.
Yeah.
Yeah. Too much black smoke following bad tuning. A little puff here and there is okay.
A little puff.
Loads and loads of reek. I'm not a fan.
No smoke, no poke.
I've been saying Matt's keen for a bit of black smoke, I can see.
It depends. It's got its place, hasn't it? If it comes along with a popcorn limiter, a 6-inch lift, and stupid remold tyres...
eBay light bars that fill up with water.
They're the ones, yeah. They're brighter than the owners, but that's about it. Then you can keep it. A little puff of black smoke from something well-tuned...
Yeah, it's under load. It's pulling hard up a hill. It's got a big rifle with a trailer on the back. I don't mind a bit of black smoke.
It's
almost like,
we're pulling. Especially from an older engine. Mm. But modern engines, you can get the power without the smoke, and therefore it's a little bit try-hard.
You see, my TD5 has been tuned by Empire Tuning, and part of the thing was I want it to pull really well, but I don't want smoke. And guess what? It doesn't smoke.
Yeah.
No smoke. You get a little puff on startup, but that's just...
Exactly. Mine's going in for tuning with Alive. It's exactly what I've discussed with them.
Yeah.
It's why it's having a smaller turbo.
Because that's
essential. So it gets a boost instantly rather than the big and the big cloud of smoke. It'll be boosting all the time. It'll be burning clean all the time. And it should. It shouldn't smoke its off.
I had a bit of a funny story about getting my... I had the Defender TD5 and I was about 19, 20. Never didn't have a penny to my name. I was an apprentice at Marshall's still at the Land Rover dealer, but I loved this Land Rover. And I thought, oh, I'm going to get it remapped. I want a bit more power. One of the UJs went out on the front prop, so I had to take the prop off to drive it around. Still my only car. I drove it every day. And then I got a puncture in one of my mud terrains, and I didn't have a spare because obviously you don't have a spare. Yeah.
Yes.
So I drove all the way up to Louth, where Alive are based, with a set of borrowed steel wheels and 205 tyres with only rear wheel drive to get it remapped. Gary must have thought I was an absolute idiot. Yeah. It's the things you do when you're young, isn't it?
Your priorities are
right.
He did an awesome job.
Of course.
He might remember that. I doubt it, but he might. Anyway, let's crack on with some of these. Orange or any other colour, plastic sand tracks stuck to the side of a Land Rover that never get used.
I don't mind that.
I think if it's like a...
They might get used one day. Yeah. It's like a winch. To be fair, it's just like having a winch.
The number of winches you used to be able to see at Land Rover shows, you'd go around and you'd be like, yeah, that's not wired in. Those lights aren't wired in.
It's just bolted it on for the aesthetic.
Yeah.
They're not wired in. I used to have spotlights on a Land Rover that weren't wired in because I didn't know how to wire them in.
So you're
on an A-bar.
Guilty of it.
And then the A-bar, the two spotlights, no wires.
I'd say that's better than some of the wiring jobs I've seen.
I'd rather not have a go. I'd rather not do
it. Yeah. Than I'd agree with that. I respect someone more who can hold their hands up and go, I'm not quite sure how to do that. I've bought them, I've mounted them, so they're not kicking around the garage, but I'm going to wait until I can get someone who knows what they're doing to wire them up, rather than seeing them scotch locked to the high.
That's me, yeah.
The amount of... I found some on my Land Rover where someone scotch locked the tow bar kit in and I lost my... Just, I despise those things. The fact that you can still buy them is wrong.
When you can buy proper, like, heat shrink and
Little heat shrink things, they're brilliant. Little heat shrinks with solder in, fantastic.
I've seen them. I forget where we used them.
You fitted the tracker, wasn't it?
Yeah, that's
if you buy the good quality ones, buy the cheap ones, they're terrible.
The ones we used for that job were from the military, weren't they? They were military grade, fantastic.
They are really good.
Anyway, let's rattle on because you said there's a few.
There's a lot. I'm going to skip over a couple. Rusty rear cross members on late defenders.
No excuse. I saw one the other day. The rust on yours goes beyond the cross members, isn't it? Is that a bit harsh?
Have you not got a chassis to do on yours?
Right, let's talk about things that are actually going to happen.
Hey, let's talk about priorities, right?
Yeah, I might chuck a cross member at it because that is quite bad. But it's not. There's no holes in it. It meets the MOT standard. And I've hung 3.5 tonne off the back of it a few times. Hung a bit more than that off the back of it quite recently.
On private roads.
It's not fell off, so it can't be that bad. When it falls off, I know it's bad.
They reckon an inch of weld will
hold a ton.
Yeah. Is that true? Yeah. An inch of my weld.
Well, yeah, an inch of good weld is roughly a ton.
So when you see a Rusty Cross member, that's 3.5 inches of weld.
Yeah. Well, there's more than that. But you think you've only got the two bolts holding it. But then again, those two bolts are M24, are they? I think they're about 7.5 ton each in pulling force.
Tow bar bolts.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah,
so yeah, it's decent.
All these people go, well, you can't recover off your tow bar. Yeah, you can. I've dragged tractors out, all sorts. I've never brought one yet. The cross member will give up before those bolts give up.
Mm. But no, I think there's no excuse for a rusted cross member because it's there in your face. You're seeing it every day.
Mm.
But I put my hand up now. I need to paint my cross member before the winter sets in.
Yeah, yours is getting a bit scabby.
Well, they just do. They're just exposed all the time, aren't they? And
yeah, you're right.
So if you've got a rusted cross member, go and sort your cross member out.
This will divide opinion.
Mm.
Small steering wheels that look cool but make it impossible to drive. I've never had a problem with a small steering wheel, and I think they free up quite a bit of room in the cab of a Defender. I don't really have an issue with them.
Yeah, but they make them horrible to drive.
Do they?
Yeah, I don't like. I have two quickly steering wheels. I have one that's a bit too small. It's an inch smaller than the one I've got at the moment, which is like a Motulita one.
Yeah.
And I find it too choppy. It feels too much like a go-kart. I prefer a bigger steering wheel.
You got standard steering wheel on yours?
Standard in mine. Cranked over at 90 degrees because I had the tracking done and he didn't. So I need to take it off and recenter it. When I had a truck cab, that could have done with a smaller steering wheel. Mine, because I've got the different seats in it, I can get the seat further back, it doesn't really bother me. And I quite like... The problem I have with the aftermarket steering wheels is if everything else isn't aftermarket in the cab, they stand out like a sore thumb.
Yeah, I agree, actually.
Unless you just get a plain black one, they look...
Well, yours is quite understated. Mine is not a Proto Tipo. It's from Optimil, isn't it?
Yeah, it's... I don't know. It's got three holes.
It's all black, though. And
If it's all black, then...
It looks factory.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's why I chose it. But I've got a wooden-rimmed one, which is an inch smaller, which... You know when you fall in love with something immediately, but then you put it in the car...
It doesn't suit the car that you put it... No, you like the thing, but you don't... It doesn't suit the car.
And it's the width of the...
It's got to be chunky.
You need a chunky rim.
You need a chunky rim.
Yeah.
It's all about...
You can't have something dainty in a Defender.
No, they're not. They're substantial.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, with you on them.
Cool. The Discovery 5. That's all it says is the Discovery 5. What's your take on Pisco 5, Matt?
I'd have one given, but I think the problem they've had... The problem with the Discovery 5 is it's got nowhere to go.
Yeah.
Somebody who wants a more utilitarian but comfy Land Rover by Defender. Someone who wants something luxurious for everyday use will buy a Range Rover. It's too expensive for the utilitarian market. And it's do you know what I mean? They've sort of phased it out themselves. The Defender...
They split the market too much.
Well, you've got
your model lineup.
If they'd not made the really nice Defenders, it'd have somewhere to sit.
Yeah.
But the fact that you can trim up a Defender to almost Range Rover spec, and you can trim down a Range Rover to quite a utilitarian spec if you want to, what is the market for the Discovery 5?
Mm.
Why would you, when a really nicely spec Disco 5 is Range Rover money, why would you not have the Range Rover that comes with more toys as standard?
I'm really interested to see what they do after Discovery 5 gets phased out.
I've just spent 4 days with a Discovery 5 Land Rover Relentless one. Neil Watson's putting it until the end of life. In the next issue, I believe, £84,000 specced up, 35th anniversary. And what a lovely, lovely thing to drive. But if it was my money, I would still have to buy a Defender.
Yeah.
It fits my lifestyle a bit more.
And they're so good. The new Defender is so good. Why would I... The Discovery 5, it is a lovely car. But it is a car. For what I do go off-road most days. I go in fields, I go in rough yards and quarries. The new Defender has the better departure angles. It's got the white clean floor. It blends. I honestly think, and I know people call it the Pretender, but they're stupid. It blends utilitarian and luxury so, so well. It reminds me more anything of like the first Range Rovers.
Yeah.
Where they were still utilitarian, as in they had the rubber floor mats. You could clean them out, you could put the sheep in the back, but then you could take the family out on the Sunday and you wouldn't be embarrassed to be seen in it. They have absolutely nailed that car. And as soon as I can afford one, I will be having one.
I think I think everyone was a little bit sceptical when it got announced, but the only people I've met who don't like it have never been in one.
Yeah, or they just die hard, and they're the same people who will insist that the 200 TDI is the greatest engine ever made.
Yeah,
I mean, unpopular opinion.
It absolutely is.
And the TD5 isn't that engine.
The TD5 is better. The 200 TDI...
Yes, Matt agrees.
The 200... Right, we're going to get onto the ultimate unpopular opinion here. Right, 200 and 300 TDI, the only reason they've got such a cult-like following is because the engines that preceded them were so, so terrible.
I agree.
The
naturally aspirated diesel.
The 19J was an awful cobbled together attempt at a turbo. You look at your contemporary engine. So 200 TDI was 1992, was it?
Came out 1989 in the Discovery.
In the Discovery.
Daihatsu 4-track and things like that.
This is exactly it. So your 2.8 that was in the Daihatsu 4-track at the same time. More power, better engine. Well known for the car rotting around it and falling to bits, but and the engine still...
The engine will still be running today.
The 2.4 in the Toyota Hilux at the time. Again, similar power.
Non-turbo.
No, the 2.4.
They were advanced. They
did have a turbo one after the 2.4. Okay. Absolutely. I've seen them on 300,000 miles. Pull like a train, no issues. 3 litre.
The car rotted.
The car's rotted, but so did Discoveries.
Yeah, I was going to say. Yeah.
But if we're talking about the actual engines, 3.1 in the Isuzu and the 2.8 Isuzu that preceded it, more powerful, a standard. Almost as tunable, not quite. but a lot more refined, I'd say. Bigger engine, more reliable. The 200 TDI, it was good, but it always wanted to blow its head off. I have never known a single one of those make it past 150,000 miles without at least a head gasket. You could. They were better than the 300. The minute you boiled a 300, it did the head.
This was, yeah, that was the main flaw of the 300 TDI.
To be fair, boiled it up.
They put the water pump so far down that as soon as you lose any coolant, it's like, nah.
The one thing I'll give the 200 and the 300.
300 water pump right at the top, the 200's further down.
300, yeah.
They did make them very easy to work on.
Yeah.
They were incredibly simple, but they've got this big following. The TD5 is a better engine in every respect.
I love a TD5.
Internal fuel rail. Why?
Yeah, but how hard? Stupid. But how hard is it to fix?
They crack. They leak into the sump. The oil level goes through the roof. No lubrication. They breathe in their own fumes. They run away. You don't get that with a TDI.
Yeah, I've seen TDIs run away.
Really?
Yeah, I've seen them pick up on their own oil when the oil seals go in the turbo.
I'll take umbrage on your mileage as well.
Well, mine's
done... we featured a Discovery 200 TDI in LRO that had done 600,000 miles in its original engine.
Yeah, but how many times has that engine been worked on?
No, it's been serviced. I can't remember.
It's probably on its sixth head.
Service.
It's 19th turbo.
I would say, yeah, the 200 did have a problem with the heads cracking around the glow plugs and things
and
like that. But
that 600,000 mile 200 TDI will have leaked enough oil.
That's why it still is.
He's not rotten. But the TD5s are good for big. Mine's on 270,000 mile on its original engine. And it is one of the sweetest sounding TD5s I've ever had.
I just can't get on with them as much. I just love the...
The amount of people who don't like them just because, oh, it's got an ECU. I'm like, yes, it has. And it's the most basic ECU that's been put in. It actually means that for a backyard mechanic, once they've invested in an Anacom or just a basic code reader, it's easier to work on because it'll point you towards what's wrong. Whereas a 200 TDI or a 300, you've actually got to have half a bit of nous about you. But when it starts smoking different colours, what bit's blowing up this time? The TD5 will point you in the right direction.
You'll never change my mind on this. Overall, the TDI is a better engine.
But on what grounds?
Reliability, pure reliability. If you wanted to drive a Land Rover across miles and miles of expansive plain with nothing around...
TD5. But as long as you know the engine... Yes, for a complete beginner.
Do you not find that the TD5 pedal is a bit weird and there's nothing better than a throttle cable?
No, I agree with you there.
You're there.
Yeah, I do agree there.
Yeah, the fly-by-wire.
Yeah, it's a bit
that
like
stupid
on-off.
Dead bit you get when you want to pull out of a junction and you're like, I don't want to do that. Whereas TDI, boom, straight on it.
The dead bit is called someone's unplugged the MAF sensor.
Potentially.
That's the dead bit.
Or the MAF sensor's dead, which you also don't get with a TDI.
No, but the minute it's dead, you order a new one and a little man in a van turns up 3 hours later and you fit a new one.
Or it's like, oh no, my starter motor's started to get a bit of a funny winding, so it's going to corrupt the signal from the crank sensor and then the engine won't start. You don't get that with a TDI either.
I mean, I have been let down by the potentiometer.
Your
ECU.
And
there was no way of getting anywhere.
Please don't
dead.
Think I'm hating the TD5, but it's just not as good. All round, it's not as good as a TDI.
Oh, but when it is, reliability, maybe ever so slightly. But even that, I'm not... Because I've had that Defender of mine now, the TD5, for, I'm going to say, 6-7 years. It has never been on the A. I'm jinxing this badly, aren't I now? It has never been on the back of the big yellow taxi. I pulled it out of a wood where it had been stood for 2 years, and within 3 days... had a Series 1 on a trailer behind it, driving it to your show.
You did.
And it didn't miss a beat all the way there, all the way back. Bits might have fallen off, but it still rumbled on.
And it's the best sounding diesel engine Land Rover.
TDV8 with a straight pipe.
Oh, okay. I forgot about that.
You cut the rear mufflers off a TDV8, they sound insane.
From standard? Yeah. Although I do quite like... TDV8
has got a...
TDV6 is still quite nice sounding.
Yeah.
Have you ever heard... Here's an unpopular opinion for you. Don't put any kind of non-standard exhaust on anything with a TDV6. They sound absolutely terrible. TDV8, yes.
TDV6, never experienced that.
Oh, my word.
No, I've never heard one.
They sound so limp, just wet and horrible.
Yeah. TD5s can be... If you put a full-on sports exhaust on a TD5, they drone.
Yeah, they do. But when you give it the berries,
when you get one right,
it's sweet.
It, the perfect amount of bass, but that 5-cylinder bark is nice.
It's lovely.
And
I
don't know if I'm yours. You get the bit where you've obviously got your setting off. You've got no power.
Yeah,
and then it kicks in, and then you let it rev to where you think you should let off, and you keep on, and it goes into that. It seems to have like another 500 RPM
rev a lot more than you think.
You feel like you're going to break something.
Yeah.
And
then
it suddenly finds another gear and...
It's weird, isn't it? It's
but that's where they sound well.
Yeah, when you put it... Oh, yeah.
That's the...
Quite an unpopular opinion right now.
Go on, then.
The Ineos Grenadier is the 4x4 that Land Rover should have made.
No.
No. So far as if it was what they should have made, they would have.
Yeah.
They spent...
They'd be selling more per year than Ineos.
Well, look what Ineos are doing. Yeah, it's not...
They're not exactly selling hundreds, are they? And I haven't seen a single utility company with one, which was their whole...
I have seen a few being used commercial. I mean, say utility companies, but I've seen...
That was their whole thing, wasn't it? That it was going to be there was no vehicle for British telecoms to use for going across fields anymore.
Yeah.
There is, they've all got Hiluxes.
I don't hate the Grenadier. I quite enjoyed my time. I had one for a week and I thought it was a nice thing. But would I buy one over a new Defender? No chance.
Neither would I.
And is there going to be a backup in 10 years' time? Yes, you'll be able to get parts for the engine and gearbox because they're off-the-shelf components. Mm. In 10 years, am I going to be able to get a new wing for that car?
Yeah.
When they've realised that they're losing money on it.
Yeah.
If I use that car as it's intended, where am I going to get a new alloy, a new wing? Do you know what I mean? When I break the door handles off it, where am I going to get those bits in 10 years when they've stopped making them?
Yeah. I don't know.
I'd like to see it succeed.
Yeah,
I would.
They did a bit of a rug pull, though, didn't they, where it was going to be built in Britain and made now it's been made in Germany. The bit of patriotic support I would have had for it, they've lost me. I'd rather support Land Rover.
Yes.
Now. So...
And actually, if you were using... I know people say, oh, you know, it's like when you meet someone new and your mate introduces them and you go, you know, they're a bit of a knob, but you get used to it. It's like that. It's kind of like you want it to be better every day than it is. It's like people who claim to not be bothered by the big lump in the footwell and the fact that the small door opens before the big one and the slight weird ticking noise that the petrol engine makes if you get a petrol one, they claim not to be fussed about that. But actually...
That is the exact same thing people say about the old Defender. I don't care that I've gotten away from my right arm and my leg gets stripped on. And it's the excuses you make because you love something. But the Grenadier hasn't got that following.
No.
The reason why Land Rover has such a following is because they're not very good.
Yeah.
That's an unpopular opinion.
Well, it's funny you should say that because that was one of the next ones. But I just think if you were to put your money, if you had a stack of cash in front of you and you had the opportunity to buy either one of them, it would be New Defender all day for me.
Yeah, me too.
Sim, I want something that's better than what I've currently got. Otherwise, I might as well keep what I've currently got. And I don't think a Grenadier is that much better than a well-sorted standard Defender, Defender.
No.
So why would I spend... $30,000.
They're still dear, aren't they? They've depreciated a lot. I mean,
there's a lot of used ones around.
Yeah, there are.
But they're still...
They're not great for residual, let's put it that way.
No. No. I wouldn't mind going the Quartermaster.
That at all.
But they can only carry a packet of wet tissues before they're overladen, can't they?
Yeah.
The GVW's rubbish.
And there's no benefit to having it tax efficient, not tax efficient.
No.
All right, we'll kick off with some more.
Go on.
So, after listening to the latest podcast, Steve's negative opinions about Range Rover L322 and how it has a monocoque chassis and subframes. I don't actually remember you being negative about that.
No.
But you
mentioned...
I said they're harder to jack up and support if you're working on the ground.
Especially if you don't know what you're doing.
I don't think that's what I said, because I didn't really appreciate that until you said about working on... If I had one, would you work on it?
Because the front arms droop so far, don't they, when you jack up the front.
And they can try and level. If you're not careful, like, if I remember right, if you leave the boot tailgate open, they won't do it. But if you jack one up, they'll try and self-level themselves sometimes whilst you're jacking them and chuck themselves off the jack, which is really good fun.
Talking about 322s, Adam Wormleighton, who was on two or three podcasts ago.
Yeah.
He's been, while I was on holiday, he was indeed sending me adverts for some very nice, for $10,000. Mate, you can
they
get
are,
some exceptional looking.
I have never owned as good a car as my L322. It was an all round. I had a 2007 TDV8.
Finding the right parts for your Land Rover or Range Rover shouldn't be an off-road challenge. At BMH4x4.com, we've built a smarter way to get you back on track. Our new website is now live, the simple, fast, and reliable way to find the parts and accessories you need. Supplying quality parts for Defender 1983 to 2016, Discovery 1, 2, 3, and 4, Range Rover Sport 2005 to 2013, with Range Rover P38A and L322 coming soon. All parts are backed by expert knowledge, quick delivery, and a 2-year quality guarantee. Visit BMH4x4.com, built by enthusiasts for enthusiasts.
Okay.
And honestly, the best all-rounder I have ever owned.
Would you have another one?
Yes, I'm going to.
You're giving it? Yeah.
I'm at that stage now. I'm toying between buying either like a 18 to 19 plate 405.
Okay.
Because it's in the cheaper tax bracket. And that last L322, I think I had it 8 or 9 years. So that £900 either, so if I'm going to keep the next one the same amount of time, it will add up. So the L322 I'd buy would be a last off the line 4.4. As many toys.
12, isn't it?
Every toy I could find on it. But an
L405... 15, 16 grand?
Yeah, so an L405 isn't much more.
No.
And I'm saving 500 quid a year on tax. It's cheaper to insure. Parts are cheaper. And they are easier to work on.
They still have the 4.4.
Yeah,
you can still get the 4.4.
And the early ones of those. I've noticed the jump, isn't that?
You can get the 4.4 quite late on.
Yeah, the SDVA. The only thing they really suffer from is there's like an oil cooler package in the middle of the V that sometimes leaks. But other than that, they're pretty bulletproof.
Is that actually a better car than the L322?
Well,
I money was not for a 20 grand budget versus a 10 grand budget.
What the L405 has got going for it, personally, is I don't like the looks, but I like everything else about it.
Yes. So I
what
like
do
the
you
looks
like about it.
They just don't look Range Rover-y enough. I like a squarer car.
They've grown on me exterior. The internal, I don't like all the screens. That's put me off. Because at the minute, I've got that Sport as well. That's a bit similar, but the screens aren't too big in that. But the interior, as in the actual seating position, all of that is lovely. They drive amazing.
Yeah.
But from talking a mate of mine, they've got another podcast, the In the Doghouse podcast. Marlon on that is a former Land Rover tech.
He loves Land Rovers, don't
he? Hates them, but he's an absolute wizard at fixing them. And he was saying the 405, the wiring is a lot more sensibly laid out, just in terms of how stuff is put together. It's a lot easier to diagnose problems on. And he makes a very good point that the problem with the 322 and the Sports that year are going to have, the very early CAN bus wired cars, all that copper wiring is getting to the age now where it's getting brittle. And I don't know if you've ever tried to chase a broken wire in a CAN bus network.
Never.
Where the sheathing's intact. It's not fun. And it can literally write the car off just in labour hours. Because if you think a wire's broken in a 5-volt system, which makes it very, very hard to put voltage down and trace and look for a break, the amount of hours it can take at £50-60 an hour for a man to manually go through and test every single wire to every single
copper. That sounds
and because it's CAN bus, that broken wire can be anywhere in the car, but it can be something as simple as like on the 322s, if the brake light, if a side light goes out, it can make your gearbox start playing up because they're on the same CAN bus network. And I had it with mine, it was putting my gearbox into limp mode, and it was because I had a bulb out on the side lights. Because it was just upsetting, because obviously it uses the brake lights as part of the ABS trigger to trigger the 4x4 system.
Okay.
It's all interlinked.
Madness, isn't it?
And that's the bit where, and people coming at you, like I'm speaking as someone who runs a garage, you feel so terrible if you're charging a customer £600 in labour for what is a 20-second repair. But it's how else do you do it? Because you've spent the time, you spent a day looking for a broken wire. And you found it, and yes, it's only took you 30 seconds to fix it. But that's what puts me off the 322 now, is that it's getting to the age. Wires go brittle over time, especially in cars with soldered joints and stuff. You see it on 90s and stuff, that old soldered joints break down, which is fine on a car where you can diagnose there's 20 wires. When there's 400, they're all the same colour, and they're all in a bundle together, wrapped up in heat shrink.
The old favourite for me was the Disco 3, where the fob wouldn't work, wouldn't unlock or lock the car. And there's a, like you say, a solder joint underneath one of the kick seal covers in the passenger side, and that would break up and fall to bits. And it would be the same thing every time. So you just overlay a fresh wire from the receiver module down to the fuse box. Perfect. Just bypass it. But if you know what you're looking for, it's easy. If you don't, your workshop controller's coming out every 5 minutes going, you found that problem yet? And you're like...
And there's always going to be, as these cars get older, there's going to be newer problems that aren't on forums. And like, you do get lucky a lot of the time. Someone's generally had the problem before you. But I've just... I think we're reaching, they're reaching that age now where they're such a complicated car, but they're getting to 20 years old.
They always leak water into the boot onto the infotainment pack as well, don't they?
Not when you drill a hole in the bottom of the wheel.
Well, it still leaks in, it just leaks out again.
Exactly, it's fine. It leaks through.
So the first thing to do when you get one of those is take the spare wheel out, drill some holes in there.
I'm sure there was actually a Land Rover service action on P38 for that.
What, it came with a drill bit?
Drilling a
hole.
That
sounds about right for Land Rover.
I'm sure there was.
Shit, that P38's been sat outside for about 3 months. That's probably full of water now. I should really go and do something about that.
Quality motor. I like a P38.
I'll sell you that one.
No, you're right.
It's lovely,
full
that
of
one.
Water, is it? Oh, yeah. Sign me up.
It's empty.
It might be. It's about to get a Land Rover approved service update with a 10mm drill bit, so fine.
Oh, dear. Okay, a few more. We've already touched on this already. Old Defenders aren't... Sorry. So the opinion that old Defenders are nice to drive is wrong. They're not. They're awful. Simply awful.
They sometimes are awful. It depends on, for me, it depends on what frame of mind I'm in.
An
sometimes
awful one.
It's the best thing ever.
An awful one is awful to drive.
Yeah.
If you're getting one that's not being maintained.
A molested
has
one.
Terrible tyres on it. Has
the bushes hanging out.
The bushes are hanging out. It's had the cheapest shocks they could possibly buy chucked on it. But if you're getting a nicely sorted one, getting one of Twisted's, and tell me one of them's horrible to drive.
Yeah,
no, different
kettle of fish.
But that's right, it's the same car.
It's this, the quality differs, the seating position and everything else is
together.
The same.
Different.
But even a normal, if you put it together well with quality parts and someone who half knows what they're doing,
or it's never been to pieces and it's tight. Like mine, really.
Yeah,
my TD5.
Yeah, yours is nice to drive.
Drives really well.
For my 110 isn't bad.
It's never been to bits.
It's worn. There's a bit of play in the steering, but it's not. It's worn nice. It's never... Do you know what I mean?
They bed in, don't they?
They bed in, but I've always put decent suspension on.
Yeah.
I always make sure the steering box is tight and adjusted up and it's got a decent steering damper. There's an unpopular opinion.
Go on.
You don't fix your steering by putting an expensive steering damper on it. Fix the bushes or the play, whatever's actually wrong with it. Don't mask it with an over-engineered steering damper.
I agree with you on
that. You don't need it.
Yeah, my swivels are absolutely shot to bits, but I'm going to fix
it. I'm going to fix it with a 40-pound steering damper.
Yeah.
Mongs.
Here's another one that Matt will agree with this. The Disco 1 and 2 were great cars. Disagree. They were a parts bin festival when they rust like the Forth Road Bridge. They are as desirable as having athlete's foot.
I can't hear a bad word said about Discovery 1.
I love a Discovery.
I've still got a Discovery 1. It's absolutely rotten, but I've got one.
Yeah.
Discovery 2, I've had two of them. Brilliant car. Absolutely brilliant car. There were better cars available, but especially second hand, there was nothing to touch a Discovery 2 for its price point.
Had Land Rover not raided the parts bin when a Discovery 1 came out,
it wouldn't have happened.
Where would they be now?
Yeah.
You can go back and listen to our interview with Mike Sampson, designer of the Discovery 1 body style, on a previous podcast. It's very good.
It is very good.
And very informative. And Mike is
I wasn't there.
A lovely chap.
I really should do something with that one of mine because it's quite a rare one, I think. It's one of the first. It's L-Reg. So it'll be one of the first five doors. And it's got the blue square interior. You know, with the little grab handle and.
The Terence Conran.
Yes, that's the one. It even. I don't know if it's still there. It did have the bag.
Oh, really?
But I think that's long gone or been eaten by rats.
The bag is there. People are looking for them, aren't they?
Yeah. But no, they're good cars. I like them.
It still starts.
But they are a bit of a
TDR. You'll get that with a TDR. So if that had one of them stupid five cylinders in it, it'd be turning over and turning over. The fuel pump would be whining. It'd be going, no, I don't want to start. TDI, half a turn, boom, off.
I have to chuck 2 litres of oil in it every time I start it. And none of the door handles work because they all just pulled off. Because they were off a Morris Marina, I think.
They were, yeah.
Yeah, the windows don't go up and down. They're stuck half down. That's why rats are living in there.
That's minor problems.
But it does still start.
So Land Rovers that have been, I won't say the company names that this guy's quoting because I think it's harsh. Land Rovers that have been modified by certain companies are somehow amazing. No, they bolt on some Chinese bits, new wheels and tyres that look silly and are impractical, and then charge 50 grand extra.
Oh, I can think of a few of these.
Fair play to them for rinsing those with more money than taste. Stick them in the same dustbin as stuff messed about with by another company.
Can I just have a quick look at what those companies are? Because I've got an idea in my head who they are. Actually, I wasn't thinking that.
Oh, yeah,
because I've seen some nice ones by Urban. Did I just hear that?
Cheers, mate.
I have genuinely seen some nice work by that.
And, yeah, I have.
They're into the Grenadiers now, aren't they?
Yeah.
No, not necessarily. Not into anything, really.
It's like a friend of mine had his new Defender done by Seeker.
Yes, I've seen them.
And he's a 110 commercial he's got. I think it's a 2002. He'll be getting rid of it soon. I might have to go and speak to him. But they put the nice big alloys on, but with the chunky tyres. Did all sorts to it. And yes, they probably have pulled all that stuff from various suppliers, but they've put the look together, if you know what I mean. And people saying it's easy, go and have a look around any of the shows in the car park, the mismatched things where people have just bought stuff without a vision of what they want to create.
Yeah.
You have to stick to that vision.
You have to, and that is a lot harder than it sounds.
Yes, no, it is.
That's where companies like, there was one called Sabre as well. Sabre Automotive did New Defender, and people at Arctic Trucks, they really
they got their look and they stick to it. Mm. Whereas a lot of the time when you're trying to build something yourself, especially if you're doing it payday by payday, where you've allocated yourself, right, I'm going to spend £300 a month. So you go and buy the bumper, and then by the time you buy the sliders, they're out of stock. So you have to buy something slightly different, then your vision's chit.
So then your taste changes. I thought about this a couple of podcasts ago when I built a V8 110. And before, by the time it was finished, my taste had changed. So I didn't like what I'd created.
And the other thing as well, if you go to like...
Because it took you 20 years to finish it.
10. No, it wasn't that long, but it was long enough. It was long enough to... You got to remember when Landry, the tastes have all changed now. Everyone's building like resto mods and stuff, aren't they? And lots of companies sprung up because they think it's easy. Everyone wanted to compete with like Twisted.
Yeah, but no one can.
No one can. Twisted,
they've got a 10-year head start. They've learned all the tricks everyone else has to learn to get to where they are. Mm. And they're just ahead. And they've got such... The alloys they put on are the only thing... So there's three alloys that should be on a Defender.
Okay, come on, let's go.
Unpopular opinion.
Yeah, okay, I like boosts.
A boost, especially the 18-inch boosts.
No, I don't know. 16s.
The 16s, but an 18 does look good on the right car. So it just gives it that slight sort of modifier we can't really tell. Yeah.
Yeah.
Mac 5s.
Yeah.
Or ZUs, same thing.
Yeah, yeah, okay.
Which I run, and the Twisted 5-spoke. They are the three greatest alloy wheels.
Oh, alloy wheels, right.
What's your take on when everyone went out about, I don't know, 4 or 5 years ago and put sawtooths on absolutely everything?
They didn't look good when they came out new.
I don't mind a sawtooth on a factory car.
Yeah, I agree.
Better options. One of the best that I've ever seen is Drew Bowler's invention, the banded steel.
Yeah.
The standard steel wheel, but just slightly wider.
Devon Defenders.
You can't improve. Yeah. Classics are classics for a reason. Mm. Same with the Rostyles when they banded those.
Yeah, again.
It's a classic for a reason.
Devon Defenders, all sorts of cool stuff.
But Twisted are doing like an 18-inch Rostyle, aren't they?
Yeah.
That's an alloy, though. That looks even...
Is it an alloy, though?
Yeah, it's an alloy.
I didn't know that.
Really cool.
Need to go... I was working up there for like 2 years and I never went and called in. I do need to go and have a look around.
I'll put it out there now, right? So I've driven quite a few, as you have, Martin, a few of the tuning companies that were. Some of the finest Land Rovers I've driven have been Twisted.
Yeah.
They are definitely one of those where the price is justified for what you get.
Yeah, the amount of re-engineering they put in. Just daft things like making sure the doors shut properly.
Yeah.
Don't
they weight the doors as well? I'm sure
they do weight the doors heavier so that they shut better.
Yeah. It's like that is the sort of detail that makes such a difference to how the quality of something feels. It's why an L322 feels like quality. Everything's heavy. Mm. And that, VW Golf, that was their whole thing, weren't it? They made an entire advert that the door shuts like a Golf. And it is a thing, the weight of so if something's heavy, you pick up a tool, you pick up a ratchet and it's light, cheap crap. You pick up a nice, heavy, snap-on solid steel ratchet. You're like,
wrong.
It's quality.
Boris the Blade wasn't wrong, was he? Heavy is good. Heavy is reliable. And if it doesn't work, he can always hit him with it.
That was on Snatch, the film Snatch. It was Wonder of the Night. I watched it.
It's quality film.
Brilliant. Love that film.
I can quote most of Snatch, to be fair. Yeah. Right, next one.
Me and my mate, when we ring each other up, we always answer bonjour.
Oh, we like, me and my friends are very different. We answer with different things.
Yeah.
No one has ever removed a prop shaft from a Freelander to save fuel. It's always because they're too tight to replace the viscous.
Very true.
That is true, isn't it?
That's 100% true.
Yeah, because if it worked, they wouldn't take it off.
Exactly.
No.
And when they did the Freelander 2, the Eco one, the TD4E and the ED4, they had to detune the engine because it would torque-steer horribly, which is why...
Oh, really?
Just, yeah, they're like, I think they were the first 150 horsepower Freelander 2.
So you were talking about one of these ED4 Freelander 2s. I just don't see the point.
It is pointless. It's like the two-wheel drive Evoques.
Pointless.
Pointless.
Yeah, you that's can have a popular much, opinion, right?
You can have a much nicer driving, proper car.
Yeah.
I'd rather have a two-wheel drive BMW or out something that's going to drive 100 times better for being lower handle better. There's no point having the big high driving in two-wheel drive. It's pointless.
Yeah, I agree.
You've just described half the cars on the road now, though, crossovers and stuff. They're all two-wheel drive and they're all
They're not Land Rovers, though.
And half the price of an Evoque, probably.
Mm.
Do you know what I mean?
I don't totally not see the point of the ED4 and the TD4E because you're getting the same ground clearance, the same suspension, cheaper tax, cheaper on fuel, and you're still getting a Land Rover.
Stick a Jaguar badge on it. Mm. Call it a Jaguar, which are cars.
Talking of Jags, there's no Jag soldier.
No, it hasn't. Interestingly, though...
Do a deal on a P38?
No.
Go on.
No, this would be funny for all of us.
No, I really don't. No, my Jag has not sold yet. However, right, so this gets onto another point. The guy who's selling the Jag for me, James Agger, has a L322 that's coming up for sale in Tonga Green.
That sounds like a Partex dream.
No.
Well, it's funny you should say that.
What's it worth?
Someone messaged me on Instagram and said, that Range Rover Steve was on about on the podcast, where's it going to be for sale? And I said, well, the fella who's selling it owns James Agger Autosport, and rang him up.
Has he rang him?
Yeah.
Okay.
I don't know how much he told him it was for sale for.
Yeah, he's messaged me.
This was yesterday, I think.
Yeah, that's why he messaged me yesterday, asking me, what do we think it's worth?
What year is it?
It's a 2000, it's a 55 plate.
Oh, so it's a CC6? Don't bother.
It's a 3 litre.
Why would... Right.
BMW engine.
Yes, but why would you do that to yourself?
I don't know.
You're getting the neutered version. TDV8s are so cheap.
He's got a TDV8 now anyways, because it's a replacement, but he uses it as a tow car, picking up TVRs.
But TD6 has just rev the off. Noisy. They are not a Range Rover should have a V8 in it.
Yeah.
It's not a Range Rover without a V8.
I'm inclined to say...
188,000 miles.
It should be a petrol V8.
Yeah,
to be a real Range Rover.
It's been a good workhorse for a number of years for them. But it's Tonga Green. It's the Clarkson test.
Yeah, oh, God almighty. If I hear Tonga Green one more time, I'm going to...
Yes, they are nice, but there's also some amazing spec 322s out there.
So what's it worth?
£1,500.
It's not worth a lot, is it? High mileage, T6. Yeah. Yes, it's not. Green.
How rotten is it?
£2,000, tops, maybe.
The problem is, you won't know how rotten it is without taking the plastic caps off the bottom of the sills, and by the time you've took them off, it's too late to get them back on again. They're one of those problems that you ignore until the point where you can put your hand inside the arches.
I know it's had a completely rebuilt ZF gearbox.
They all need that.
But
you can, if you drop the Dr. Tranny in them, which is a lubricant, not a euphemism. To be fair, mine, I put that in when I first got it, thinking that might buy me a year till I have to rebuild it, and it lasted 7 years.
Mate, it's amazing stuff.
I know, this was done properly at a proper gearbox place, but
it's going to need a rebuild regardless.
Yeah.
I think it's between third and fourth, they get a little shudder. It's like driving over a cattle grid.
Yeah.
Horrible.
It is horrible, but I had my gearbox flushed again by DLS. They flushed the gearbox, put some Dr. Tranny in it, and it did another 7 years. And I worked that car.
They are. I had to look into it quite significantly before I decided to pour this unknown fluid into my Disco 3's auto gearbox oil. I flushed the oil through with a load of the cheapest ATF I could find at the time, and then put two tubes of Dr. Tranny
in. Yeah, that's exactly what mine.
My word. It
fixed mine.
Yeah.
Completely fixed it.
Before I did it, it wouldn't... I mean, you say you get a bit of a shudder at certain RPMs. This thing was flaring all over the place.
See, mine wasn't that bad. Mine was just... It was between third and fourth, especially bad if you were towing or if you were uphill giving it some.
Right.
It was like a proper da-da-da-da, like going over a capital grid.
Oh, horrible, yeah. No,
and that good. Dr. Tranny just fixed it completely. Yeah. Which, you know, you're going to have to get it rebuilt anyway. So for the sake... I think the gearbox flush was 150 quid. And I think that stuff's like 25 quid a tube.
You know it's going to be reasonable when Ashcrofts themselves recommend it.
Yeah.
It is actually quite good.
But it can buy you another 2 years.
Yeah.
Before you need to get it rebuilt.
Or a quick sale.
But yeah. Even then, I wouldn't feel... Now I've done it to my own car, I wouldn't feel horrible about doing it. Because I know it's not a... It's not like putting chainsaw oil in something before you...
Load of sawdust in a ridge.
I have never put really thick oil in an Ingenium.
It's all right, Karen.
So, if you have an Ingenium that gets that rattle that tells you it's about to die, you should never, ever, ever put really thick oil in and then take it to We Buy Any Car. Never, ever do that. It is definitely not the way to get rid of an Ingenium engine Jag or Evoque or Discovery Sport that's about to expire. 10 watt 40 is definitely not the stuff that you put in to make it go quiet before you take it to We Buy Any Car.
Well, no one should be buying one of them now, then.
No, it's a shame. But again,
And the bit that is, they don't sound that bad. When they first start knocking, I had one come in and little old lady pulled up in her Jaguar and she's like, oh, it's making this rattle. I'm like, looked into it, I'm like, oh, it's just a heat shield, that. That's all it sounds like. Literally just like a heat shield around. Like, pulled all heat shields, having it still rattling. Put the screwdriver on the block and ear to it. I'm like, I have to go and tell this really nice little old lady that her really nice, really well-kept Jaguar is scrap.
Oh, no.
It's not good, is it?
No. And whoever's bought that from We Buy Any Car is in a world of pain now.
Do you know, they're not making much in auctions because dealers are wise to it now.
Yeah, they know. They know not to buy.
Yeah.
It's not a case of if, it's when.
Well, a mate of mine, he does deal in them. Nicholas Charles Cars, he deals in a lot. I think he budgets now on a lot of them to put an engine in and then sell them as a...
Right.
We're selling it with a new engine. Even if it's not gone, it can just be a thing like...
Really?
It's worth doing because then it is... You know you've got 70,000 miles in it then.
Yeah.
If you look after it. Because the cars are worth it. Discovery Sports are a lovely driving car.
How much is an Ingenium engine?
I'd have to look. I think about 6.5.
Yeah.
And then the labour on top.
Then the labour on top, which isn't that bad because these modern cars do come to bits quite quickly.
Because we spoke about it ages ago about whether it's worthwhile buying a really lovely spec blown engine yourself.
I'd say you'd be better off working... If you were going to go down that route, as like doing it as a business... You'd be better off working out how to retrofit the two, because the computers should talk to each other, how to retrofit the 2.2 that was
in the
so it'll fit the platform. So if you could work out a way of making the more modern computers talk to the 2.2, which you can buy out of any French piece of scrap, so you could probably get one of those engines for 1,500 quid running.
If you buy a used Freelander 2 one, they're only 500-600.
That's what I mean. So if you can work out, if there's some clever... All these people are coming up with these ways of making different engines talk, like the chaps at, they were putting the TDV8s into
Bell Autos.
It wasn't Bell Autos. I was talking to. It might be either. They're up north somewhere.
Oh, MDRS.
MDRS. Yeah, I was talking to them chaps about putting a TDV8 in a Discovery 4. And if someone that can work out a software solution.
Surely you can get. Yeah.
That would be the swap. If you could start putting 2.2s into the newer Evoques and, Discovery Sports, which are the design to fit, the engine mounts are in, should all bolt in.
Yeah.
So we're in the earlier cars.
The issue you would have...
It's emissions.
Is emissions, but if you were...
Not telling people.
Yeah.
I know you can't say that, but I can.
No, it would all fit. And actually, the number of, like you say, Discovery Sports you see on eBay and stuff like that, and you think, oh, it's just, they're beautiful, beautiful cars, but they're just...
And the 15 plates now are worth more than
they are
because they're the last of the 2.2s.
Yeah.
And you can, I think there are some that are Euro 6, aren't they? Like the last ones.
Quite possibly. I couldn't tell you.
I'm not sure. There is a sneaky, because transits were the same, there's a sneaky, sneaky 6-month period where you could get something on, because I had one, on like a late 2015, early 2016, where they were the older engine, which again was a 2.2, the Defender engine, but with no AdBlue.
Right.
And they were Euro 6.
Really? Wow, I didn't know that. I'd have to have a look. But yeah.
Wait, there is a, it's like a 6-month period where people, I think they were literally just altering the software to make them meet Euro 6 standards without having AdBlue. And that is the...
That's the one.
That's the goal. Apart from that one, blew its engine. But typical 2.2. But yeah, I think there is the same... I'd have to look into it. I think there is the same thing in the... In the Discovery Sport.
Because they are a beautiful car.
They're lovely to drive.
Yeah.
They are very nice. And they're very good on fuel.
Tell you what, I went in the other day, an F-Pace.
I like them.
Yeah. 2-litre engine and petrol supercharged.
Yeah. So a friend
this thing went like... Honestly, it was superb. It sounded good as well.
I can't remember if it's supercharged or turbocharged. It's coming into me for a service in a few weeks. A friend of mine's got a V6 petrol F-Pace. It's the one below the SVR, I believe.
Right.
I can't remember if it's supercharged or
supercharged, aren't they?
It's something. I can't remember if it's super or
it's
turbo.
It's the same engine as the F-Type Jag, three-liter supercharged. Yeah, it is.
I had to go in that, and that thing is a rocket.
380 horsepower.
Yeah. I thought my sport's 300 horsepower, I think, the TDV6. That's quick. This thing is indignantly fast.
Yeah,
really. It is. The same chap's got a supercharged Range Rover 322, which is quick. A lot quicker than a 322 has any right to be. This Jag is... It actually feels made for it.
Yeah.
It's got the proper suspension. It's a sports car, just four-wheel drive.
No.
Well, they do with SVR F-Pace.
They do.
The final editions was like, I can't remember, I don't know if it's Goodwood edition or something like that, but it was a really, really nice sort of like metallic aubergine, but really deep colour with all like bronze bits on it. That is absolutely gorgeous.
They are a lovely car. They are.
If it wasn't for the engine, I would probably have one as a daily driver.
Mm.
Mm. But now I've driven one of those V6. If I see one of those come up, they are an absolute fantastic machine. We're allowed to promote them a bit, aren't we? Because they are
part of the same stable.
It's pretty much the same.
Yeah.
It's not long before it becomes like LRMJ, is it?
Well, Steve's already tried that with his XK, but now he's selling it. We need to get the Jaguar content from somewhere else.
Yeah, yeah.
But
it's not to say that I won't have another Jaguar product. Not yet.
I think you need an XJS.
I know where there's two XJRs sat.
They're a proper gangster. That's a bit...
XJRs. Yeah, they're cool. My mate had one of them.
There might be two of those sat in my yard that could be rehomed.
No, I can't. No, at the minute, right, I just want a reset. And then I'll say, well, what's next?
What's he going to buy? Something boring in Japanese?
No, never. Never.
There's no point having a reset, because if you get used to just having...
Nothing,
then the money will just disappear, because it just... when you get that lump of money, it tends to just...
I'm a bit tight.
I just keep
hold of it.
But the more, if you don't spend it, with the interest rates the way they're going, it's just losing value all the time.
Yeah, but so is tax of the car, £800 a year.
Yeah.
Also loses.
It depends what you want.
I do like things tied up in cars, because I like the fact that you've got one.
If you buy the right thing, it doesn't, like Defenders, don't particularly lose any value.
No, it depreciates
value.
Proof, really. If you buy the right Defender, you quid's in.
And I'd argue that L322s are getting to that point now.
They are.
If you buy the right one and keep it, they're not. They don't seem to be getting... Like, the last few months I keep an eye on them, they've not lost any value.
No.
The 405s are dropping like a stone. But again, they seem to have levelled a little bit.
That might be the way in.
Yeah.
Just step up, because... You talked about the wiring and stuff.
It's the cheaper tax as well, because they meet Euro 6 standards. I think they're about £350-360 a year. It's £500 a year difference.
Yeah.
That's
your insurance.
It's not an insignificant amount of money.
To drive as well, like we spoke about last week with the Discovery 5 versus the 4, the L405 is a nicer, lighter. It feels like a more planted car than an L322 because it's got all the aluminium suspension. Less unsprung weight, they handle a lot nicer.
Okay. The Sport as well. That one I've got at the minute, it's only an interim thing.
What year is your Sport?
16.
L494. I like V6.
It's a lovely car. And the older Sports, I'd never liked the ride on them. That is a lot more Range Rover-like.
Okay.
And it's a very nice size.
What tax is that?
I think that's him. About 350, 360 or something. I can't remember.
Too bad.
I just put it in and put it on the direct debit and didn't worry.
Yeah.
I didn't want to know.
Yeah.
Sometimes you're better off just not looking at these things and just watching the numbers on the screen get smaller.
People get het up about it. Once the direct debit's going out, you're no better off financially when you have or haven't got it.
No.
You just live to your means, don't you? You live to what you...
If there's 50 quid less in your account at the end of the month, it's one less takeaway.
50 quid better off. It just seems to work. Yeah. It just works out the same. In my opinion.
Celebrate Christmas with Land Rover Monthly. Everything a Land Rover enthusiast could wish for. From thrilling adventures and expert tips to restoration guides and buying advice and so much more. And this Christmas, take out our special subscription offer and receive an exclusive limited edition Land Rover Monthly die-cast car set. The perfect gift for you or your loved one. But be quick, only a limited number are available. Subscribe with this great offer today at landrovermonthly.co.uk. UK offer only while stocks last.
I'm quite lucky that my insurance is a fixed cost because it's through the garage, so it's a trade policy, so I can add or take away as many or little cars as I want. But yeah, the tax thing, I don't tend to notice when I've got six or seven cars taxed or when I've got two. It just it is just a cost. It comes out of the... You don't look at the account and go, oh, that's come out. I look at it more as like, oh, there's that amount in there. I can afford to do this month.
Yeah.
Like you say, you adjust what you're going to spend that
just
month.
Most people... just before payday, pretty much run out of cash. Then they get paid, and then they go, I'll spend again.
Yeah.
And it's like a big funnel, isn't it?
Yeah, that's it.
So I'm not that worried about tax. I don't think, if you wanted to tax an L322, and that's what you wanted, or an XK, or something like that, and it's 64 quid a month, I think that's a small price to pay to have something that you want.
Yeah,
and the life is too short.
The running costs on a 322, I would imagine, would be a lot cheaper than a 405. In general, I didn't find parts overly expensive.
Right, yeah.
Like, just general maintenance parts. Like, servicing wasn't expensive. Stuff like brake pads, because they eat brakes.
We'll do
322s. Yeah. It's such a heavy car. At least once a year, I was putting a set of pads in it.
Okay. But you were towing them.
But I do tow a lot, and I live in the Peak District, so up and down Dale all the time. They're not a cheap car to run, but I wouldn't call them an expensive one. Like I can't remember what oil they take. I think it's only 5.30 or something.
Yeah, it's 5.30.
It's not like modern, like that Transit I've got outside that's on like 0.30 that's £9 a litre.
No.
So they're not extortionate things to keep on the road. And like the airbags, I think, are about £70 a piece. A hub isn't, I can't remember what I paid for a hub, but like your steering arm, like your suspension arms, which always wear out on them. Yeah. Every 2 years, you're going to be putting those on. Especially if you're not buying OEM, but they're about 25, 30 quid a piece.
You've got that aftermarket support now for L322, whereas it's the same with anything. As it gets older, more enthusiasts or, you know, independents start taking them on. There's much
Britpart bigger market. Start supplying everything for them.
Exactly.
Yeah, you get all the suspension components from Britpart.
The L405 hasn't quite reached that yet, I don't think. A lot of it will still be OEM. But
okay.
Yeah, it's interesting.
But then it shouldn't need as much stuff because it's a 10-year newer car.
Yeah,
so suspension quite significant.
Yeah, so and it's not as heavy. It's, what is it? 700 kilos? Like,
I can't remember the exact figure.
It's quite, 3.2. What's it? Is it 3.322? 2.7 ton out of the box.
I believe it is 2.7. Yeah.
It's. I know that I've got one up on my two poster. I always put props under them.
Yeah,
because I just get that little voice in the back of my head. Like, if this drops, you ain't got time to get out from under it.
Yeah.
So I always put a couple of props under those when I've got them up. They're a big heavy lump.
I remember trying to put a L320 Sport, first generation Sport, on my mate's ramp to do the belts on it, like I was turning about the jacket. And they had like a old, I forget what they're called, like a half moon shaped shelter type thing that they had a two poster in. And started going up. I could hear this noise. I'm thinking, what's going on here? And the two post ramp.
It lent in.
Started coming in. I was like, what's the heaviest car you've ever had on this? Well, I don't think we've had anything heavier than like the BMW on it, and it's starting. I'm like, nah, we'll do it on the floor.
Scary stuff.
I was my shed that my workshop thing's just been re-roofed and re-sheeted, so I took the opportunity to renovate the workshop. So I painted the walls, built myself a little office in the corner, just generally tidied the place up, like boarded out all the walls so it looks nice and new. I was walking past around, like, that nut looks a bit loose. Went round it, like, I think there was only two tight nuts on my four poster between all of them. Like, I've had a snatch Land Rover up on that, which is an armoured.
Yeah,
that's getting on for like 4 and a bit ton.
Wow.
I'm like,
we'll nip them up.
Ooh.
And then, scary stuff, isn't it?
And when I was talking to the landlord, I'm like, I'll fix the concrete in there. He goes, depends how much money my dad had at the time when he built a shed. He's like, well, I'm never going to look. Wow. There's just some things that
yeah.
you. I've had a Range Rover on then, it's not gone anywhere. Mm. I do make a point of not swinging on stuff when it's on a two poster.
Yeah.
I don't like two posters. It's only because it was in there when I took the shed on that I've kept it. I like a four poster.
Yeah.
But yeah.
It's a. Yeah, what the ramps rate to only applies if the concrete's thick enough to actually support it.
And it applies to who was welding it up on what day, and it is a Chinese one, so I am quite... Supposedly, it's a 4.5-ton ramp.
Right.
So I look at that as 2.5's probably all right.
Yeah, and they say there's a safety margin the other side of what they quote, but...
But you do know what a CE marking is these days, don't you?
Oh, go on.
It's China Export.
There
is a... No, honestly, I'm not... Google this. There's a company... the Chinese government have registered a trademark the exact same as our CE mark as China Export. So they can CE mark stuff legally.
Okay.
And ship it over here. And it's not CE marked. It's never passed
but
a single...
China Export marked.
It's Chinese Export marked.
Wow. Wow.
It's like
cheeky.
I bought a CE marked plasma cutter off Amazon. Open, and it... To stop working. Oh, it must have blown the fuse. Opened it up. It just had a piece of wire
joining
the fuse holders together. I'm like, nice. I mean, I've never put a 6mm hex bit into a fuse holder.
It's a slow blow, isn't it?
No. That's a very slow blow. You can have a 2.2 bullet fits exactly. That's slow blow with audible warning.
Oh, yes, of course. Oh, exciting news. You know, on a podcast, I can't remember if it was last week or the week before, I said my trusty Sealy impact gun had finally died.
Yes.
I have a replacement on the way.
Oh, right, okay.
A replacement influenced by Matt here. I've actually gone and got a Kielder.
So, the Kielder, one of their reps who has a tool van approached me. It was when all my tools got stolen, about 4 years, I think 3 or 4 years ago. Approached me and said, we'd love to help you out. Can we send you an impact gun? Do us a few videos and it'll help you out. Obviously, replacing all my power tools. It was like a $5,000 or $6,000 bill I got to replace everything.
Wow.
So, them saving me, buying that was a massive, massive help. So, they sent me out. I'm thinking, yeah, I'll use it for a month, make a couple of videos of things, and as soon as I can afford it, I'll replace it with another Milwaukee or DeWalt one. It's still here.
Yeah.
I have been absolutely... It hits, in my opinion, it hits just as hard as my Milwaukee did. A little bit heavier. But I think the gun with 2 5-amp batteries, I think it's about £250 or something.
Yeah.
Cheap as shit, really. For the work that's probably done.
Well, it'll undo like 36mm tractor wheel nuts. And it'll undo those. About the only thing I have had that it wouldn't undo was the main crank bolt on a 6BT that was seized on.
Right.
But in the end with that, I ended up putting the 6-foot breaker bar on it and pushing it down with the telehandler to get that to break off. So no impact gun. An inch drive impact gun was probably going to struggle with that.
Yeah. That's going to be the first big challenge for this one that I've got on the way is the crank pulley bolt on the 200, which I'm hoping it will do. I think it will.
Oh, honestly... If it wasn't any good, it would have... I felt like after a couple of videos, I've fulfilled my commitment to paying them back for gifting it to me.
Yeah.
I'm still using it.
Yeah.
It's still in every... And it's a pain for me to use it because it's a different battery to everything else I use.
Right.
But because it's good and I'm a tight Yorkshireman, I'm not replacing it just so it fits all my other tools. When it does the job, I have not found anything that I wouldn't expect a half-inch gun to do. But yes, I've got 3/4-inch drive stuff as well, so because I go up to big kit. But I haven't been nothing but impressed by it.
Yeah, I'm really excited to give this one a go. I've got another mate who's got them as well. He recommended, because I said to him my impact had died, and he said, you should get a Kielder one. Because they're made in the UK, aren't they?
Yeah, Benny Sheffield.
Yeah.
So what my plan is with mine now is, because I've got those two, I'm going to buy a few more batteries and buy their grinder, drill, and a couple of other bits, and have that as my road. Basically, so I have to keep taking stuff out of the van.
Yeah.
Now I've got the workshop. I'm trying to be more workshop-based. but obviously I still have customers I have to go out to. So my long-term plan is the Kielder stuff's going in the van as my mobile stuff, because I'm bound to break it or leave it behind on a job, so it's cheaper to replace.
Okay.
But good it knowledge. Does the job. It is just as good as anything. It is up there with all the... I can't speak to the other power tools. I haven't used them. Mm. But the impact gun is up there with DeWalt Milwaukee. It is a professional-level tool. It is not a... They are really doing themselves a disjustice with where they're sort of marketing themselves.
Right.
Like, they're selling out, like, Machine Mart and stuff, which I would call more of a top-end consumer store rather than a professional shop.
I was going to say, I didn't know until earlier on, I was speaking to the guy from Kielder, that they actually retail through Machine Mart, who sponsor... they do tech tips, sponsor tech tip, and they sponsor the podcast, and they do product shout out on the podcast. So I'll be really excited to tell everyone where they can get their own if they want to get on the Kielder hype.
Machine Mart's a brilliant shop.
Yeah, to be honest,
it's impossible to go in one without buying something.
It's the thing that knows the UK is terrible for tool shops.
Yeah,
for actual shops where you can go and physically put your hands on an array of tools.
Right. Yeah,
you go to America, you've got like four or five different shops that have massive ranges of power tools, hand tools, this, and you, do you know what I mean? You can go and get your hands on things. Over here, we've got Machine Mart and Independence.
Mm.
And your Independence tend to be tucked away on industrial estates. Oh, so unless you know, you know, like, shout out, there's a cracking one in Beccles, Norfolk, called Epic Tools.
Oh, right.
Absolutely. Have a look on their website. I try not to spend money. He does TikTok lives and like walks around his shop.
Oh, okay.
But he has got an aisle the length of this room all the way to the back, just Weira either side.
Oh, really?
He stocks everything. And their tools are so cool. They're so gimmicky and fun. Yeah. And then he's got a massive row of Barco. He goes up to like the great big 36-inch adjustables. And every time I've been to see him a couple of times when I was working that way, and I could not walk in that shop without spending 500 quid every time. It physically impossible.
His eyes lit up when you come through. Yeah.
It does, but so did mine.
Yeah,
I'm just walking around like a child in a sweet shop, just like need. It's like the Snap-on van's not bad because he only comes once a week.
Yeah,
once a week's quite often.
I break a lot of stuff.
Yeah.
I was going to say, you get more for your money from any other brand, pretty much. I was taught buy Snap-on where it really matters. I've got Snap-on combination spanners and ratchets and things like that, but everything else you can get away with other brands generally.
My sort of rule of thumb with tools is it's stuff I don't use very often, I'll buy cheaper brands a lot of the time, but if I break one, then I replace it with Snap-on.
Got you.
Because then I've got the I've obviously broke one already, so I might as well have something with the lifetime warranty. Yeah. And then, like you say, all my ratchets are Snap-on. Spanners, because they are better.
Yeah,
The Flank Drive Plus, yeah. I've got the ones as well, though, the Mac Tools spanners, because they're better for on the road. It's coming like a plastic holder.
Right.
And they've got a very similar thing to Flank Drive Plus. They've got like a cam in the open end of the jaw.
Yes.
So as you put weight on it, it locks on, so you can't pull it off the nut.
Yeah.
It cannot slip off. As soon as you've got weight on the spanner, so it's got like a cam in it.
Oh, handy, yeah.
It locks tight.
It gets tighter and tighter.
And you can, our Mac, not the current one because he's fat, but our old Mac man used to do a demo where he had a great big nut on the ceiling of the van, and he'd lock onto it and then do a pull-up off the spanner,
right,
like locked onto a nut. But yeah, the new guy couldn't do that. The van's only 3.5 ton. But
wow. I'm sure he'll love you saying that. Right, we must wind this up because the camera battery is flashing and I'm nervous that it's going to cut us off. New issue.
How do we know that's not cut us off?
Of LRM. I'm just going to chance it. It's on sale today. Matt's column's in it. It's really good. You should definitely buy it. Not only do you get LRM, you get Land Rover Life, which is back with a buying guide for every Land Rover that you could possibly want, should you want to get into one. Fantastic. And the calendar is back.
Yes, it is.
Oh, we get a calendar?
Yeah.
Yeah. You haven't got one yet. We'll go and get one.
And you, so,
You give me the cheap version of the magazine.
I'll get you.
I'll write you an article. And I don't even get the proper version.
Listen.
This is a quality
sort
podcast.
It out, right? I'm nervous about this. So, yeah, you can get it in shops, but if you want to save money, subscribe. And the offer is still on for the limited edition Land Rover Monthly model set. Only 250 pieces available. They're selling very quickly. So do not hang around if you're thinking about it. Get on landrovermonthly.co.uk, sign up for a subscription, and get everything delivered, fixed price, cheaper than you can get it in the shops, and it gets delivered directly to your door.
Bargain.
Follow Steve on Instagram, Steve Miller Automotive. Follow me, Land Rover Martin, and if you want to find Matt's hilarious content, I'm sure you will. Where can we...
get that.
Fit and Matt on pretty much every social media platform. I'm a bit of a whore for them.
There you go. So as always, thanks for listening. We love to get your feedback and reviews and all that jazz. Editorial at lrm.co.uk. See you next week.
All right, for now,
I'll see thee.
Riffy.
He did the catchphrase.